Virtus is a Latin word for manliness, but it also implies excellence and courage. Welcome to Virtus, a show dedicated to inspiring and cultivating virtue, character, courage, excellence, manliness, and honor. I am your host, Bo Hutchess. All right. Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to Virtus, the podcast where we're talking about excellence, virtue, manliness, and all that good stuff. You know, ever since I started this podcast, some friends of mine said, "Hey, man, you got a great radio voice." But I think I've got someone on today who can beat my radio voice. I got Jonathan West on the line today. He's the purveyor of the Being Husband podcast, and we're going to talk about C.R. Wiley. We're going to talk about his project with the Being Husband podcast, and just see what he's about. So, Jonathan, thanks for coming on the show today.
Bless you, Bo. I appreciate you bringing me on and giving me such a humble intro. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, man. You got that radio voice, but not the face for radio. You know, they say if you got a face for radio, you're not very handsome. You got a good voice and you're a good looking guy, so you got it going.
I sure appreciate it. My wife thinks so, and so much she decided to have my baby. So
there you go.
That's all that matters, isn't it?
That's right. At least you found one woman,
that's
right?
Exactly. I tricked one woman into it. That's right.
That's right. Awesome, man. Well, Jonathan, tell us a little about yourself, you know, some of your personal history, and then you can kind of launch from there into the Being Husband podcast and what you're trying to accomplish there.
Wow, that's a big old question, and I will. I've been thinking about this. So here's where I want to start. I am the son of I'm a third generation preacher's kid. My father is a pastor, and my father's father was a pastor, John Wow. P. West Sr. and John P. West Jr. And then Jonathan, Mm-hmm. not senior or junior, just my own it's kind Jonathan. Of deep. Yeah. And so I grew up in the church, man. I've been a follower of Christ for as long as I can remember. But I don't think I became a man of God until much later in my life. And I always make that distinction. It was very different growing up in the faith when you don't have the challenge of real life, you know. And so fast forward to college, you know, I was a guy that was always interested in working with his hands. I got into a form of farming or agriculture called permaculture. I started an urban farm while I was at college and sold produce to faculty and staff, which is a really unique part of my story that'll actually play out into some things that I'm getting into when we talk about this C.R. Wiley stuff and this mm-hmm. idea of, you know, productive property and entrepreneurship. But yeah, fell into that. Loved a girl since I was in high school. Her name is Leah. And that's my son right there. I apologize if you guys can hear that. But yeah, I've been with her since I was in high school, man. And we got married, when we were in our early 20s, like 23. And have been together ever since, man. So 12 years we've been together and 5 years we've been married. And, she's a good woman. She loves me. She supports me. And, that's why I married her. And I'm gonna be honest, I married her cause she looked good. You know, a lot of guys like, oh man, like her soul. And I listen, I was a young man when I got married. Okay. So the soul was important, but I wanted my wife. Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to just be honest. Easy on the eyes, right?
Easy on the eyes. Yeah. Still is.
Still is.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that's kind of our deal. And we actually lost her father-in-law back in 2017, in a pretty intense way, pretty unexpected way. And she turned to me for a lot of wisdom and guidance at that time. And I knew theoretically, you know, that all things work together for good, but I had never really felt that deep in my soul and then be able to carry a woman through that truth. You know what I mean? When tragedy mm-hmm. happened. And so God kind of went through a testing process with me, a pruning process with me, and said, you know, in many respects, I'm going to force you to put away childish things. And so it was kind of that pruning process time where it was a real big crucible for mm-hmm. me. It was a lot of emotional stress, a lot of anxiety and all of that, to the degree where you know, I left my corporate job because it was killing me with everything else I was going on, or everything else that was going on with us, and went to higher education to kind of, I guess, mend my soul in a way, going back to the college that I graduated from to work at. And it was a really challenging time, man. And so not fast forward, but during that time period, I found two really big books. I found three really big books, actually. I found Kingdom Man by Tony Evans. I found Wild at Heart by John Eldridge. And I found Sovereignty, actually, by Ron Mickler. And these three books were really formidable for me, because formative for me, because they were talking about being a man of faith in a way that I'd never really heard before. They were talking about it from a standpoint of courage and boldness and provisioning and protection and leadership and all of these really cool ways that, you know, kind of masculine guys like to talk about, but they talked about it from the standpoint of, at least with Wild at Heart and then with Kingdom Man, in a way that those skills and abilities were actually God given. And they were to be submitted to God so that God could order them in the right way. And it drove me to a whole thing where I started a podcast, Being Husband, which was actually not my first podcast. My first podcast was a podcast. It was a theology podcast about being human. Nice. And then I got into this masculinity stuff. I said, I've got to make this podcast more useful. And so that's when Being Husband began. Nice. Back in 2019. And I actually had the idea back in 2017 to do it, but just never acted. And so 2019 happened, and we've been doing it ever since, man. This conversation of where masculinity, faith in Christ, and, you know, you could say maybe preparedness all intersect. And it's been a wild ride, man. It's been a huge, huge blessing. I've met so many interesting people. I've gone to so many interesting places, and I've you know, become a man. Like I said, I've become a man of God, not just a child of God.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I've definitely seen you kind of working your way up in the ranks of the manosphere, I guess, as it were. You know, I see your name dropped here and there every once in a while, and I feel like I've been seeing it pick up more. And if we could have more guys, you know, speaking truth into that world, you know, I think that's great. I think they get a lot of things right, you know, but missing Christ and some of those other key things are really important. So,
great
to see you kind of work your way up in that arena.
We should talk about the manosphere too. I think that's because I think what's going on with the manosphere right now is it's transforming. Because the manosphere, if anybody doesn't know that listens to this podcast, the manosphere has largely existed in different phases, but the first kind of iteration of it was kind of the pickup artist thing. It was men trying to understand women. Mm-hmm. And then it evolved into this whole idea of not just men understanding women, you know, to have sex, which, by the way, this is not a Christian movement. I should say that.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So PUA was just men picking up women, pickup artists. And then it transitioned into this red pill movement, which was more along the lines of men coming to terms with the truth about women, but also the truth about the world and how it really works, how it decides winners and losers, you know, et cetera, a lot of different things. And then now it's kind of coming to this head where there are so many men that, okay, we understand women. Okay, we understand the world. What is all this really for? Mm-hmm. And what's happening really right now, which is fascinating, is there's so many Christian men, older men, not me, but older men, guys like Doug Wilson, guys like C.R. Wiley, guys like Michael Foster, that are talking directly to the points and saying, yes, but here's what this is actually for. Here's God's intention behind the desire for you to conquer. Here's God's intention behind the relationship between man and woman. And so what we're seeing right now, which is cool, is strong Christian men engaging with, you could say, young bucks that are a little bit wild, you know what I mean? And picking up on a lot of this stuff. And honestly, the guys that were doing pickup when they first got there were young, and they've now grown up in their fathers and all of this. And so they're figuring out where all of this stuff is going. And Christianity has a really great, not a really great, has the best answer to where this is going. It is the answer to where this whole idea between man and woman coming together for the family, what it really means and what it's for. So it's an exciting time to be in the space. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah, that's excellent. Yeah, I listened to C.R. Wiley. He said, mentioned something the day where kind of a masculine guy kind of in the manosphere world contacted him and wanted to have lunch with him. He wasn't a believer, but you could tell he was kind of on the edge because he wanted the things of Christianity. He wanted a solid woman. You know, he wanted a God-fearing woman. He liked the ideas that, you know, CR and Wilson were putting out. So they connected that one. I'll be interested to see if that guy comes to Christ. But I think that these young guys, as they've kind of grown up and settled down or hit a new phase, you know, I think they're starting to see, you know, maybe some of the appeal of Christianity and of religion and of that idea of, you know, becoming more stable and stuff. So it is an interesting time, just kind of me looking on the outside in some sense, you know, just kind of looking in and observing the what's going on. So it's, yeah, interesting times for sure. So let's go ahead and let's chat a little bit about C.R. Wiley. I know that,
absolutely.
You're a fan. You're an acquaintance, actually, more than a fan.
You know,
and I think that's great. And actually, I think the way that I stumbled upon your podcast was you put out something tagging C.R. Wiley on Instagram, and then he shared that on his story. And I was like, oh, I got to check this guy out, you know, and I've been following ever since. So
it's awesome.
I'm a big fan of his book, Man of the House, probably the most formative book in my life. And I love talking about those ideas. So, let's just talk about Man of the House for a couple minutes and just how that effect on you and how that's kind of informing what you're doing nowadays.
Yeah, man. So Man of the House is an incredible book. I mean, it's really C.R. Wiley is him and the guys that he rolls with on Theology Podcast are really talking brains. And I've told him that to his face. So you're just really a talking brain, you know, he laughs or whatever. But the purpose of the Man of the House book was to help Christian men understand what a household is for, right? Mm-hmm. Like why God has us in the position that he has us. And he draws upon like Greek, I don't know if it was mythology or not, but it was Xenophon's household codes. Mm-hmm. And so he draws upon that. He draws upon the household codes that Paul writes about in the New Testament. And then he draws on just general practical advice on how to, you know, prepare for worst case scenarios in life.
Yeah.
And it was a really formidable book because it tied a bow on everything. Like I was telling you before we hopped on, it tied a bow on this because I've always kind of been, so my bent towards working with my hands always kind of had me in the prepper kind of mindset to some extent. And then the masculinity stuff had me kind of on, you know, this whole idea about what does it mean to embrace masculinity, right? What does it mean to lead, to hunt, to provide for a family in a very visceral way? And then it tied a bow, another thread, I should say, with the faith, right? And that all these things, masculinity, preparedness, actually are a good thing. And that God, in many respects, particularly in the wisdom literature, is calling men to do such things. Mm-hmm. And so he just did that in a way that was so unconventional. he's tying in Greek stories like Xenophon that's just completely unrelated. And then he's tying in stuff about the household codes and he's tying in stuff about, economics and all of that.
Yeah.
So it just like blew me out of the water the first time I read it. And so then blows me out of the water once. I got to get blown out of the water at least five times. So I read it five more times and I feel like I've got a good grip on it now. So much so where my whole season of being husband this year is based on the four pillars of a household that he talks about. And so those four pillars are the first one, which is the lifeblood of the house. That's the marriage covenant. Mm-hmm. The second one is the money moves, right? The economics, household economics, what's coming in, what's going out, that kind of deal. And the third one of those is moral conduct. And then the fourth one is, you know, family legacy or political influence. Yeah. And so I've based my whole season around those four pillars. And so I alternate each episode typically between one of those. I'll do an episode on a pillar each month. Mm-hmm. To really kind of dig into a lot of these concepts, because I think that, again, me and you were talking about this offline, Christian men, I find, are very Christian men that have just been in the church and have never really read other material or have never really read anything related to masculinity, tend to be very one-dimensional. They only have a conversation with me about Christ and Him crucified, but we never have conversations about entrepreneurship. We never have conversations about preparedness. We never have conversations about building a garden or raising backyard chickens or, you know, balancing a checkbook, things that a man in many respects has to do, whether he's a Christian or not.
Yeah. You know?
And so
absolutely.
I just thought it was crazy that we never have those conversations. Mm-hmm. So yeah, tell me about how you stumbled into C.R. Wiley.
Oh man, how did I stumble into it? That's a great question. I think it came about just through the connection that he's got with the Moscow folks up there, doing the Moscow thing. I can't remember exactly how I found the book, but got the book, started reading through it, thought it was weird, thought it was something that was kind of bizarre, just the way he started, you know, laying things out and talking through things. But really by chapter 3 or 4, I really started to see the logic of everything, you know, how he looks at the past, talks about the Industrial Revolution, how all of us kind of live in some sense in a bubble. You know, a lot of the things that we experience nowadays, assume, you know, it's kind of living in a bubble. And at the time I was actually in the ministry, and I was interested because he was a pastor and he was putting forth this vision, basically saying, hey, you know, you don't have to be dirt poor and cheap and leave nothing for your kids or your grandkids just because you're in the ministry. And his book's not necessarily directed towards, you know, people or young men in the ministry, but that's what I took away from it. You know, he really cast this vision that, you know, you can work hard and you can, you know, leave a legacy and not just do it within the four walls of the church. And I think at that time, I think I definitely was that one-dimensional guy who thought that, you know, being a pastor was the height of heights. Of all, you know, every man should aspire to be a pastor. And if you're not a pastor, well, you're just kind of a second class Christian in some sense. But I think he really started to break down the walls of, you know, destroying that idea, you know, that you don't have to just live this Christian life in your small group and in your Bible study group and in your church. You know, the Christian life is much more. And he proved it, you know, through history. He proved it through, you know, his appealing to those the household codes and, just the Greco-Roman world that the Bible is written in, you know. So that's how I stumbled upon him. Same thing, read it once, read it twice, read it three times, and just it really has become a handbook for me to refer to go back to, and to look at this topic again, or to look at this certain phrase that he talks about. And actually, in part, you know, my podcast Virtus, he brings up the idea of being virtuous, and he brings up Virtus, and that's kind of one of the inspirations for this podcast. So yeah, I mean, I'm pretty indebted to him for a lot of my outlook on life nowadays, and, you know, really a lot of motivation in life, you know, wanting to leave a legacy, wanting to become more self-sufficient, wanting to establish wanting to establish a productive household, I guess. So that's kind of how it happened for me, and it's been a great ride. I've really enjoyed it.
That's awesome. So you were in ministry. Where are you at now?
Yeah, so I actually just recently stepped down, and actually one of the reasons I stepped down could be to this book. You know, I had a job opportunity come my way from a really good friend of mine. He works with his hands. He's a stainer, stains cabins, pressure washes up in the mountains. He's got a great business, anti-fragile. He works hard. He puts all these things into play. And I was reading through the book again, and just caught an inspirational thought, you know, that you kind of have to make this way, and you see an opportunity, you know, take it. And essentially I stepped down this past year. Me and my family are going down to New Mexico, this kind of next 6 months, for the next couple of years, to do this job, and we're going to see how it pays off. You know, it's going to help us to really, I think, establish a productive household, and we're looking forward to that. And I think it's going to be fun. So, I mean, he's still impacting me, you know, many years later. So,
C.R. Wiley has a way of getting men out of the ministry, doesn't he? I mean, he really does, because it's funny, because I studied Christian leadership in school and theology. So I thought I was going to graduate college and go be a pastor.
Yeah.
But, you know, I realized that when I got out there in the real world, I was like, man, I got bills to pay. I mean, You know what I'm saying? Like there's things I need to be doing. And my father's, you know, my father and then both and my grandfather as well were both bivocational. They were never really just pastors. Like my grandfather, he was a pastor, right? But he also worked as not a phlebotomist, but like a lab tech, I think, at a hospital here in Nashville. And then my father was a real estate agent on the side. And gotcha. So they never relied on the church to be their primary means of income. Many respect, because if you do, you kind of get into this situation where, like, all right, I need to go to a bigger church so I can get a bigger salary, right? But if it's a bigger church, 9 times out of 10, you have to kind of cater to the masses in some respect, right? Or at least the guy that's paying the biggest tithe. You know what I'm saying? You at least got to cater to him. And so being, as you pointed out, being anti-fragile and non-dependent on the opinions of people, right? The opinions of people don't pay you, creates your skill set is what pays you. And that creates an opportunity where you can say your conviction with conviction. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what I'm absolutely. Saying? Without being worried about it. I'm like you, man. I'm headed out on my own. And actually in 25 days, man, I'll be leaving the university that I work for, and I'll be doing the company's called the Suburban Farm Guy.
Nice.
And what we do is we build really beautiful raised bed kitchen gardens for people.
Nice.
And we install, we design, we maintain, if you want. And it's been a great business. We had a really good year in 2020. That was our first year. And then 2021 was even better. And so I actually got the opportunity. I've got a buddy of mine that's a VC, and he's actually coming in on the deal with me. And so you can't not take this opportunity, right, when it comes your way. And so we're going to move forward with it. And we're going, like you said, man, we're building a productive household, man. I mean, it's time for us to. I mean, this is – I don't think people understand what 2020 was. I think a lot of people think it was just, a game of politics, right? Mm-hmm. Mask, anti-mask, vax, anti-vax, BLM, anti-BLM. I mean, whatever. People think it was that. But this is – the reality is we are experiencing and in the midst of an economic war in many respects with people that are most well off, most wealthy, most resourced, becoming even more well off and resourced. And they're having us fighting over really the last scraps of, the 21st century industrial revolution, right? You know what I mean? And we're fighting over the last vestiges of that. And it's like, if you're fighting over that, you really aren't paying attention to what's really going on, because really, and let me be clear, it is in some respects a political battle. That's like maybe first degree, first dimension. And then as you get above, you realize, okay, this is really an economic war, if you really want to think about it like that, right? When you think about the fact that essentially the American middle class is gone because their stores and stuff were shut down due to lockdowns, right? And the companies that could stay open were the big box corporations. Mm-hmm. And so their worth went up quite a bit.
You know what
I'm saying? It's silly how much it went up, right? Mm-hmm. Netflix, Hulu, all the big players made out like bandits during COVID.
Yep, absolutely.
You know what I mean? And so, okay, so first degree, again, is political, but then we get above that. So really, this is more of an economic war. But then if you are a guy that is perceptive, you can actually see this is actually fundamentally a spiritual war, mm-hmm. right? because what we're seeing now are the fruits of derision, the fruits of God turning men over to reprobate minds. And that has implications on the economy, has implications on the political system. So when you understand that, you can understand your place in it. It's like, okay, I have to get my family to a situation where we can worship God freely, and where I can train my kids up in discipleship, and where my wife can grow and flourish in Christ as well. And in order to do that, I have to get free, right, from a lot of the restraints that, you know, again, an industrialized society, hyper-political society has me in. I have to get free of those constraints so that we can worship God in spirit and in truth.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for myself, you know, COVID really pulled back the veil. You know, I think we all knew in some sense, yeah, the government has, you know, there's a lot of forces outside of our control that have, you know, their tentacles in us. But I feel like the 2020 kind of just exposed that even more. You know, we kind of saw how in how deeply entrenched some of these things were, you know, not only just in institutions, but in our personal lives. And I think that C.R. Wiley's book, if it wasn't true before, it's way true now, you know, way true now. And I think I'm glad I read that, you know, previously, and then to experience this, because that's basically what he says. You know, we're fragile right now and we don't even realize it. You mm-hmm. know, we're sick right now and we don't even realize it. And yeah. I think that a lot of his quote unquote prophecies in that book, you know, came to pass. And I'm just super thankful for the vision he laid out. And it's caught a hold of me and several other guys that I know, you know, and if we can get more people kind of experiencing that, I think we'll at least be able to weather the storm a little bit better, I think. And then to come through it and then build again and continue to build. So, yeah, super thankful for him, his life, his witness. And yeah, he's been great.
He really has, man. And I tell him all the time, I was like, man, I really need you to be like in my back pocket whenever I need you, man. Cause you're like, and I even asked him one time, I said, man, can I just pay you to be my mentor?
Yeah.
Cause he just, right. You talk to him and it's just like, he just goes and goes and goes and goes. And I'm like, dude, how do you just know all this stuff? Mm-hmm. You know? And I'm like you said, I'm so fortunate to have met him when I did, because like I said, I read that book in 2019.
Yeah. Same.
You know what I mean? Yep. And I mean, that's God's providence, right? Because that's just before things got ugly. So it was a huge blessing for me to be able to do that. And so I'm encouraging all the guys that I talk with, man, if, you know, even if you don't want to start a business on your own, go learn a skill on YouTube. I mean, there's never been here's a reality too. And there's this really great book. Let me say this. There's this really great book called The Sovereign Individual. Have you ever read it?
I don't think so. Nope.
It's not a Christian book, but it is a book that is examining the history of revolutions, basically. And so during the Industrial Revolution, it was the world transitioning from a primarily church-run society to a primarily politically run society, right? That was the Industrial Revolution. We moved away from, you know, the Catholic Church and then, you know, in America, the, you know, the Protestant Church, from being the fundamental arbiter of truth, right? Because the printing press changed a lot of that. So that way, right. You know, people from everywhere could read scripture and they didn't have to wait on, you know, a guy on high to tell them how they were supposed to believe. So that changed a lot of it. So it moved to the political way of, you could say, maybe imperialism or running a country. But what we're experiencing now is the information revolution, the information age, right? Because of the internet. So the internet is in some sense the new printing press, and that's provided yet another revolution that we've experienced kind of in an accelerated way with 2020, and it's decentralized information. So that way the new age is not the age of the church or the age of the government, but the age of the individual, which has pros and cons to it, because that's mostly like a postmodern framework, right? That I can be whoever I want to be type of situation. So that has the, you know, the cons of that is that that's going to make it hard in some respects for us to advance the gospel, because people can really be sovereigns unto themselves in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But I would say it's, I would say it's a more genuine way to advance the gospel, because when you do really reach somebody, you know that you're reaching them not because of where they stand politically, but because they've legitimately experienced something in their soul, right? Because there's no political benefit now, and there's no economic benefit. The only benefit is that they know Christ and want to worship him freely. So yeah. We're in a really unique time, I think, as a body of Christ, to really utilize the information age, similar to how, you know, Christians use the printing press, mm-hmm. to really advance the gospel and do it in a way that in some respects is confronting, I think, to the, you know, the political establishment that's trying to hold on to its last bit of power that it's got. But it really doesn't, yeah. You know, at this point, it really doesn't. Right. When I can move money around cryptographically, it's like there's no, you know what I'm saying? Taxation is the only leverage, you know, a state has. And it's like, once I can move money around without you knowing about it, you know what I'm saying? You're not really useful to me anymore. You know?
Yeah. I started to kind of realize, you know, whatever the establishment is attacking, it's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, whether they're crypto, you know, and even this whole thing with like Joe Rogan, you know, the reason the mainstream media hates him is because he's better than them. You know, mm-hmm. he just sits down and talks, and he's got 11 million people per episode, where CNN on their good night has maybe a million, you know, and it's that decentralized aspect. And I think it's fascinating to watch, but also though, even with another pretty prolific figure, you know, Jordan Peterson, you know, he's out there just lecturing on YouTube, and he's kind of against the establishment in a lot of ways up there in Canada, and people have just been flocking to him, you know? So I think that there is definitely a populist or grassroots or decentralized, maybe all those things combined, you know, that it really is a revolution. You know, maybe we don't think ourselves living through a revolution, but we really are. And it's just been fascinating. And there's so much opportunity to do podcasts or to start a business or to educate your kids in a different way than there hasn't been in a lot of times throughout human history. You know, so if we can, you know, if we can ride the wave of the revolution, as it were, you know, I think it's a benefit to us. You know, spiritually and for our communities and all those kind of things. So it's exciting times for sure. It's shaking things up, but it's fun.
Oh yeah. It's exciting times for sure. And not, you know, there's never been a time in history where, and I tell guys this all the time, there's never been a time in history where you could get your household together at virtually no real cost. Right. I mean, you've got a laptop, right? I've got a laptop, but just think of the possibilities, right? The ability for you, like right now, you could start making, you know, coasters, wooden coasters, and you could become, you know, a $50,000 to $100,000 business just doing that.
Yeah.
It's never happened in the history of the world. And you can do that from your house. You can do that from your cottage. Uh-huh. Right? Like there's never been a time in history where that's been a reality, mm-hmm. you know? And then you know, what you do with that is you then reinvest in your kids, right? And you're able to actually know what they need because you're at the house doing it with them.
Right.
You know, so it's just, it's truly a blessing. And if you can ride the wave, your family is going to be blessed. If you can ride this wave, and not, you know, not feel like you need to hold on to some idea of, you know, a perfect utopian America or whatever. If you can let that idea go and just trust in the Lord, and allow him to direct your path, it's going to be a blessing. Like, it really is. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, cool. I think this has been a great conversation, and maybe you can just speak to myself and the other folks listening. You know, your podcast all about being husband, you know, competent husband, godly husband, all that kind of thing. What's kind of your, you know, your pitch to the average guy? Someone comes to you, hey, I want to be a better husband. I want to tune in, you know, send me on the right path, or what's the mission? You know, what's the exhortation to us who need to take in husbands and fathers and heads of house seriously? What's your words of wisdom for us?
The reality is that, you know, I'm a guy that is trying to build a household that stands. And the way that I do that is, number one, making sure that the marriage is on point. So, and it's funny because this pitch is actually long. It's not really an elevator pitch.
Yeah.
You gotta,
when it comes to elevator pitch, maybe.
Right? When it comes to your marriage, you gotta know, you have to understand women. And to understand women, you have to be observant. You can't look at them for what you want them to be. You have to look at them for what they are and accept that. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, number one. And then number two, get to a place where you are, you know, respectfully financially independent, right? You're earning your own wage. You're setting your own prices. You're controlling the outflow, right? So you're a good budgeter. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the second stage. Third stage is you figure out what you're about. You build a family code. You build a you code first. What are you about? Right. Yeah. And then you build a family code out from that. Yeah. And then the fourth thing is you let those things all play a factor into your influence in the community. I believe this is in Timothy, but it says, you know, don't let a young preacher come in if he doesn't have his household together. That's what it says. You're not allowed to preach unless you have your household in order.
Right.
And what that's communicating is that how in the heck can you lead a large group of people when you can't lead the people in your four walls of your house?
Amen. Yeah.
That's the reality. And so when you can get the marriage squared away, first, you got to get yourself squared away. I mean, I think that's kind of meta what I'm talking about. Number one, is get right with God, get in order, get in alignment with Him. Second stage, understand your wife, understand women very well. Third, get the finances together, income, outcome, or income and outflow. Figure out your code and your family's code, and then you can afford to be impactful in a community in whatever way God allows you to do so.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
That's excellent, man. That's excellent. I got to write those down and refer to them often because that's the blueprint. So
that's it, man. I appreciate you saying that, man. We're going to work it out together, me and you.
That's right. That's right. We're on the journey. Oh, awesome, man. Well, Jonathan, how can folks stay in touch with you? Where can they find you? And how can they just stay informed about everything you got going on?
Well, I talk a lot of stuff on my podcast page on Instagram. So if you want to hear me run my or read me run my mouth on there, you can go to Being Husband Pod. That's Being Husband Pod on Instagram. And you can follow me, you know, in terms of the podcast, actually listen to me. You can listen to that anywhere podcasts are available. We're Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, until they kick us off. You know, we're you know what I mean? I might say something wrong, so we'll see. Yeah. But we're everywhere you can get them. And I, like I said, it's a joy really to serve men in this way. I care about men. I love men. And I want men to have fruitful marriages and productive families. So that's why I'm here.
Awesome, man. Well, you're doing a great job. Keep up the good work. All the work you do is definitely not in vain. So thanks for coming on. And hopefully we can touch base in real life someday.
Absolutely, Bo. Let me know when you're in Nashville, man. We can do it. Get some hot chicken.
Hey, great, man. I'll buy.
Sounds good. Sounds good, man.
All right. We'll talk to you next time.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Remember that pursuing virtues is a journey, and it's a road that we are always walking. With new information, it's now time to act. So be wise and take responsibility. Be courageous and do what you need to do today.